Thanks for joining us. You're listening to Family of Faith, a Faith Bible Church podcast about God's design for the family, with your host and pastor of Family Ministries, Paul Funchess.
Hey, this is Family of Faith, a podcast by Faith Bible for Faith Bible. And my name is Paul Funchess. I'm here with Seth Weber. Seth, how you doing, man?
Doing all right. Enjoying good. This Monday afternoon.
Monday afternoon. It's a beautiful day outside.
Well, yeah, it is.
It really is.
I wish I had a window like you, Paul.
So, yeah, you can come over to my office anytime you want, Seth, and we'll share a window. Okay. It'd be nice. Oh, by the way, announcement, we're having another baby.
Seth. No, this isn't an April Fool's joke, even though this isn't going to be published on April Fool's anyway.
Oh, yeah. By the way, we're having another baby.
But so, we are recording this on April Fool's.
On April Fool's, and it's not an April Fool's joke. So if you are out there, we are having baby number 8. So Paul Smith and Lynette Smith, wow. You can go ahead and try to still catch up with us. It's extremely funny because they told us they're having another baby, which is number 7 for them. And we said, well, that's nice, but we're having number 8. So I still got room to grow there, bud.
You are going to have to get a bigger vehicle.
We are. So we are in the market for a we're gonna 12 to 15 passenger van.
A wanted ad in the podcast.
That is basically free and runs great. If you have anything like that, let me know.
Wow.
Yeah. It seems not hard to find. Not hard to find. It'll be okay. But today we wanted to continue our series that we've been doing on raising your children in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. And we've been going through the different phases, different stages of life, and just kind of covering some general principles for each age and stage, and trying to move our way through all the way from infancy all the way up through the teenage years. And today we are covering the preschool years. So preschool, do you know what preschool is, Seth? Preschool.
I think based on the words, I'm thinking it's pre, so it's before school.
School. That's good.
So like, yeah, you're talking about like when you wake up in the morning, up until like 8:30 a.m.
The time before school. Yeah.
No.
For about an hour and a half.
What, like, while is you're that eating like your toasties. 4 to 5 year olds.
Yeah. It's 4 and 5 year old. We are, going to talk about 4 and 5 year olds. Now this is a distinct phase because, we talked about toddlers last time in this series. Toddlers are, well, that's exactly what they are. They're toddlers. They're toddling around. They're learning how to do some simple things on their feet, you know, walking and chewing gum at the same time. Not really that, but you know what I'm saying? They're learning
basic motor skills. You should not give
toddlers gum. Yeah. They're learning basic motor skills, and they're able to pick up things. They're able to use things. Preschool is when they're really coming into their personalities. They're able to carry on conversations, and actually stay in the conversation. You know, toddler phase is extremely cute, and they're really hard to, frankly, they're really hard to discipline a lot of times because they're so stinking cute. Toddlers are, but, 4 and 5 year olds, they're really changing and growing. They're able not only to do tasks, but to do them on their own. You can leave them and they can kind of play and occupy themselves for a long time without hurting themselves. And they're able to carry out conversations and express thoughts and in full orbed ways in a sense, you know? So yeah. 4 and 5 year olds are a lot of fun, and they are hilarious most of the time because the things that come out of their mouth don't always make sense, but they're really trying. They're putting all these thoughts together. And so 4 and 5 year olds are a delight. And it's a really important time in your parenting. If you're parenting a 4 and 5 year old, you have this really great opportunity, to build, and that's really key. We're building off of what we've done in the toddler years. Okay. You spent the toddler years really trying to emphasize this idea that they are an individual under authority. As a toddler, they are learning how to come. When you say come, they are learning the word no, and that means don't touch, don't go. And they're learning discipline. They're learning that they're under authority. And so your consistent discipline, consistent and loving discipline during the toddler years can serve as a basis then to really start the learning that takes place as they're able to start connecting thoughts and express thoughts and actually put together sentences, complete sentences, and really, really able to start processing things. So this is a really fun time and a really important time, valuable time that you're building in the preschool years. So let's talk about the area of discipline. Okay, let's talk about the area of discipline when it comes to 4 and 5 year olds. When you're disciplining a 4 or 5 year old, they're becoming their own person a little bit. They're coming into their personality. You want to make sure that you are continuing your training, even outside of discipline, working outside of those times, not just waiting for the discipline opportunities, but working outside those times to train. So we do at our house, we do a lot of teaching self-control. We want you to sit, or we want you to sit and be quiet and listen for a certain amount of time. Maybe we'll have them sit in a chair and not playing with something, not doing something else, but they need to sit and listen for a minute or maybe 2 minutes, and growing that time, teaching them how to do that. You're also able to do and give them some basic chores. You're able to give them, you know, some basic chores that you would probably at first do with them alongside them. Like our 4-year-old, she cleans our toilets. That's her job. She's really excited about that. It's kind of funny, but this year, and we've talked about this before, we give chores that usually last. They have a job for the year. Yeah. And Zoe this year, she got her first job. You know, she's 4 years old.
She gets her first job. Huh?
It's her first job, and she doesn't get paid anything. But she got the job. She gets to wipe down every day. She gets wiped down the toilets, and she's super excited about that because it makes her feel like she's a part of things and she's able to do it. Now, Christy will, for a while, she'll kind of do that with her, mm-hmm. and teach her how to do that. And then there's a time where she's actually able to let her do it on her own and actually say, okay, did you do your job today? And she's, oh yes, I did. You know, and sometimes we've had them just gather up the trash out of the bathrooms or whatever. So out of the playroom. So there's little jobs that you can have them do. Again, you're working alongside them, and then they can even learn to do that on their own.
If I assign that to Noelle, she'd probably just end up drinking the cleaner.
Yeah. That's a difference between the toddler phase and the 4-year-old stage. So the other job that's funny, the other job she's really excited about because summer's coming, and we have a deer problem in our neighborhood. So part of the kids' jobs has been going out and picking up after the deer that come in our yard at night and eat all our stuff. And so part of the job has been, and she's really looking forward to going out into the yard and picking up after the deer. And we're like, I don't know that you should be excited about that, but she is. She's like, I can do that. I can have a job and I can pick up after the deer. So
hashtag blessed life.
Blessed life. She's excited about that. So there are opportunities to do some training and do some chores that they really, really are able to do at this point in time at 4 and 5 years old. Here's some, again, this is from Straight Out of the Faithful Parent by Martha Peace and Stuart Scott. They actually give a common sense tip of give them 5 daily duties, 1 for each finger on their hand. Make your bed, maybe brush your teeth. And yeah, 4-year-old is able to brush their teeth pretty much by themselves. You might need to check. We have to go behind and check, you know, how well they did on that. But they're able to dress themselves and do all those things. So come up with 5 things and 1 for each finger on the hand, and then they can come give you a high five when they're done. Now, because they're able to use more words, because they're able to express themselves, because they're able to actually put together thoughts, this becomes really important in your training and in your discipline. And again, not just when there's a discipline opportunity, but outside of that, outside of when there's an incident, you want to be teaching them the right words or the right responses to commands. Okay. When as a toddler, they're learning how to obey, they're learning how to come, they're learning how to remove their hand when you say no. But as a preschooler now, they're able to actually use the right words. They're able to use the right words with the right tone. Okay, so the voice matters. I will tell you, there's a lot of whining that goes on with this age a lot of times, and so it's body language, it's tone of voice. Are they able to look you in the eyes? Well, yeah, at 4 and 5 years old, they're able to actually make eye contact with you. So that's a huge thing. Look
me
in the eyes.
Wait, is that actually a developmental thing? Is that why Noel doesn't really look at me in the eyes?
It's hard for a younger kid to look you in the eyes, yeah.
Oh, that's weird. I didn't realize that.
My 3-year-old, 2 and 3-year-olds struggle doing that. And so they'll look, but then as soon as they look, they like look away.
Yeah.
And it's possible they could be doing that, you know, as a sign that, well, I'm not going to obey you.
Sure.
But it's just, it's difficult for them to look and concentrate. So, okay. And there's so many other things that are distracting.
Yeah. So many exciting things around.
But at 4 and 5, you know, all things being equal, 4 or 5 year olds should be able to look you in the eyes.
Okay.
And so when we say, you know, to our 4-year old, look me in the eye. Okay. And I want, here's what I want you to say. When daddy says, pick up your toys, you need to say, yes, sir. You need to have the right tone of voice when you say that, no slouching your shoulders, and you need to mimic that for them. Okay. Kind of mimic that, kind of imitate what they're doing. Say, okay, you don't slouch your shoulders. You don't put your lip out. You don't put your lip out and pout.
You guys should see this. Paul's doing this. Yeah. It's pretty funny. I'll post a picture later.
So you don't slouch your shoulders. You don't sigh, you know, roll your eyes. Don't do any of those things. Okay. Now I am not expecting their heart to be happy. Again, that people say that all the time, do it with a happy heart. Well, that's expecting the impossible. They're sinful, okay? They're not necessarily going to have a happy heart. But what I'm teaching them is that there's a right way to respond, that body language and all of that matters. So when you're going to look me in the eye, you're going to obey right away, first time, and you're going to use the right words. Okay. So the right countenance, the right tone of voice, the right words. And if they don't, okay, then this becomes something we're going to discipline them for. Now, if they do it and they catch themselves or they go down there and they realize what they're doing and they self-correct, well, then you wouldn't discipline for that. But if they're basically saying, I'm not going to obey, if they're having that type of attitude and disposition, then you correct them. And this is important. You're going to correct them. You're going to discipline them. And then you're going to bring them back to the situation that they were in. And you're going to have them go through it the right way. Okay. You don't just let them off the hook then. If it's picking up the bonus room. And listen, kids are more than able to pick up after themselves. And they can if that expectation is given to them. Now, I know some parents, that's not the expectation. They don't expect their kids to pick up after themselves. And I'm not telling you one way or the other, but kids are able to do that. So you make it a 4-year-old's responsibility. Now, a toddler is not necessarily able to do that unless you're there with the toddler and say, okay, go pick up that block and put it up, or go pick up that crayon and put it up. A toddler is not going to be able to pick up after themselves.
Yeah.
That's why it's so tiring to parent a toddler, is because you're the one having to go around and do all these things. But don't continue to pick up after a 4 and 5 year old. You're just wearing yourself out. They're more than able to do that. Okay. And you should expect that. I think if that's what you want to do, you should expect that from them. And you know what I'm saying with that? Some people have bonus rooms that they just leave junk because it's toys and that's what they want to do. And that's fine.
Sure. But close the door. You're good to go.
Close the door. It's all right. But I would say that a toddler, you should not be having to go around and do for them for a 4 or 5 year old, what you're doing for a toddler. Okay. It's an important distinction. So discipline them and then bring them back to the situation and expect the right words with the right tone and the right countenance. And it may take 2 or 3 times because they're wanting to express their will. They're wanting to express their, basically their defiance of you and their unhappiness with you, because you're asking them to do something they don't want to do. That's very possible at 4 and 5 that they're having that kind of attitude. And I'll tell you that for our family, there's times where I have to start the day before there's ever even an incident. I have to start the day by looking at my kids and say, okay, so today, here's what you're going to work on today. No whiny voice today. Okay. We all know what a whiny voice is. No whiny voice today. No pouting today. And if we have any problems, you know what's going to happen, right? So that's what's going to happen, and it's going to happen every day. And I even, with my wife and I, we have to even just take days and say, you know, today we're going to set some other things aside, and we're going to work on that whining thing today, because it's really getting bad where they're just whining and continually going to that whining. So today we're just going to focus on that and work on that. And that's really important for them because their parents care enough to say, you know, we're going to set a whole day aside and really watch this today.
It sounds so fun.
Oh, it's so fun. So much fun. Well, it's not fun, but I tell you what, it's a lot more fun doing it then than when they're 13 and they're actually able then to express themselves. You don't want to deal with a 13-year-old that has learned that they can whine and get what they want. That's not gonna fly. So you don't want to be that in that situation. So let's talk then about gospel opportunities in your discipline. So with a 4 and 5 year old, now you've been teaching the Bible. Let's just say you've been teaching the Bible to your toddlers. You've been reading scripture. You've been singing fun songs together. You've been doing that. Now at 4 and 5 year old, they are able to start to process the gospel and actually process the different truths of the gospel. Okay. And you're going to be able to use your discipline as a 2-year-old or even a 3-year-old. It's hard to have a gospel conversation with them. What you're trying to do with them is just teach them that they are a person under authority. They are an individual under authority, and you need to be a consistent, loving authority for them. Now at 4 and 5, you're able to use those same opportunities, those same discipline opportunities as gospel opportunities where, and establishing authority is a gospel opportunity for sure. But now you're able to actually articulate the gospel for them because they're going to be struggling with the same sins over and over and over and over again. And so this is your opportunity to talk about the fact that God is a holy God, that God cannot be with sin, and their attitude and their words and their behavior is sin, and God cannot be with sin. God is holy and cannot be with sin. And the only way that we can be with God, we should be punished by God. We should be judged by God because he is holy and we are sinful. But the only way we won't be judged, the only way we can be right with God is through Jesus, and through Jesus saving us, forgiving us of our sin and saving us from our sin by his death and resurrection. And you're going to have a lot of opportunities to do that because they're going to continue to sin. They're going to continue. You're going to see the same sins over and over and over again. So you have an opportunity to say, you see, it's impossible for us in and of ourselves. It's impossible for us to do right. It's impossible. We keep on sinning. And this shows us that we need Jesus. We need Jesus. And if we don't have Jesus, then we deserve to be punished by God because God is holy and he cannot be with sin. And so you're teaching the holiness of God and the sinfulness of man, and you're teaching the sacrifice of Jesus and what Jesus has done to use us again. You know, my 4-year-old, she went to Jan Jarms a few weeks ago and said, she came up after service and she said, "Pastor Dan, I want to love Jesus, but it's hard. I can't love Jesus. I want to love Jesus." And so Dan said, "Well, you want me to pray with you about it?" "Yeah, I think that would be good." So Dan prayed with her after the service that God would help her love Jesus, you know? And so again, now here's what happens during this time, the 4 and 5 year old stage. Oftentimes, you have parents that will lead their children in a prayer of salvation at this point in time in their lives. Mm-hmm. I personally would highly recommend that you not do that, okay, at 4 and 5 years old. There's just so much going on with a 4 and 5 year old. You know, there's this idea that they want to please their parents. There's an idea that they're afraid of the judgment of God, and rightfully so. But what we don't want to do is lead them into a false assurance of faith because they've prayed this prayer at 4 and 5. And parents sometimes have this tendency to, "Oh no, no, you prayed when you were 5 to receive Jesus. You're saved." And I've seen that happen a lot. Now, I don't know that happens in the Northwest a whole lot. And I do think it's a cultural thing. I don't know, but I know in the South where I've spent most of my time as a pastor, it was very common to have 4 or 5 year olds pray the prayer and then go on for the rest of their life and saying, "Oh no, I got saved and baptized when I was 5. And that is just not the case. It's okay for them to want to pray the prayer. It's okay for them want to be saved. That's okay. But we need to be, 4-year-olds can be saved. My wife, well, her testimony is that she came to salvation at 4 years old. But it wasn't the prayer that saved her. It was her understanding of the gospel and her understanding of sin and her understanding of Jesus. And she at 4 years old, she's like, I want Jesus to be my savior from my sin. And she was able to look back on that very clearly, but not all 4 or 5 year olds will be able to do that. So
are you saying we shouldn't even let them do that, or we should just not pressure them to do that?
Yeah, I would not. I guess that's maybe a better way to put it. I would not pressure them to do that. And I wouldn't recommend praying the prayer with them at 4 and 5 years old. I would just say, I am so glad that you want to follow Jesus, and we're going to help each other follow Jesus. Okay. I'm going to help you follow Jesus. I'm going to encourage you. And that's so wonderful. But I think parents, we've talked about this before, they have this urgency, like, well, if my kid doesn't get saved, then, you know, what if they never get saved? And this is the opportunity. I would say it's more important to encourage whatever sprouts of faith that you're seeing, encourage those, continue to affirm those, continue to applaud those, but don't necessarily pressure to a prayer. A prayer is not what saves someone. A prayer is not what accomplishes salvation for people. And so I think sometimes that can be about parents having more ease of mind or peace of mind than it is about actually seeing the child saved. A 4-year-old could be saved with or without a prayer. A 5-year-old can be saved with or without a prayer. If they want to follow Jesus, and this is what we believe, again, by really believing in the doctrines of grace, God is calling his people. God is going to call those who are his own. And so if a 4 or 5-year-old, if he's drawing them to himself, whether or not they've prayed the prayer or not. I think there is some confusion that you can work into somebody's life by having them pray a prayer of profession or a profession of faith at 4 and 5 years old. Now, as the child gets into the elementary years and there's a little bit more clarity and there's a little bit more, then I wouldn't hesitate in having them pray a prayer. I personally wouldn't lead them in a prayer. I'm not going to give them the words to pray. I want to hear what they're praying to God for sure, but I'm not going to lead them, hey, repeat after me kind of prayer.
Sure.
And I would return not thinking that, oh, they've prayed the prayer, so they're good to go on salvation. Let's move on to something else. We want parents to be constantly speaking the gospel to their kids, whether their kids have professed Christ or not. And this needs to be constant conversation that we're having about Christ and his work on the cross and in his resurrection. And so I would just recommend that you not lead your 4 and 5 year old in prayer. And I would tell our Sunday school teachers or Christian school teachers or whatever, you know, you have preschoolers and you have kindergartners. I would really be careful to lead them, in a prayer of profession at that age and stage of their life. But you have a window, you have a wonderful window of opportunity with the gospel to start really applying the gospel to their sin and showing how their sin really needs a savior. And Jesus is the only sacrifice that can save them from their sin and their need for a savior from their sin. So you have an opportunity at 4 and 5. As you teach them the Bible, you're teaching them to listen. They are able to sit and listen to Bible stories without needing distraction. You can now have them sit for short lengths of time and listen and begin to think through the story. So this is now an opportunity for you to follow up the story. So if you're doing, you know, pick any story in the Bible, if you're doing a narrative story, say Joseph and his brothers at the end of Genesis, you're now able to ask the question, how many brothers did Joseph have? What was Joseph's father's name? You know, where did they live? Things like that.
Comprehension questions.
Comprehension questions.
Not heart questions necessarily.
Yeah, not necessarily deep level heart questions, but now comprehension. And you're teaching them through that how to think and listen. I'm listening for these details. Now, there is an opportunity with this age group to start asking the question, okay, what does this passage show that God is doing? What is God doing in this passage? Because a lot of your Old Testament, or really your Old Testament narrative passages, the main idea of those passages is, what is God doing? Or what is this showing us about God and how he's acting? Okay. Yeah. So you're able to ask those questions. What is God doing here? What do we see about God? And they're able to actually maybe even start articulating that to some degree, or giving some guesses at what God is doing. And so it'd be good as you're teaching these Bible lessons, not just to talk about the attributes of God, but what is God actually doing? How is he acting? And God is acting to, God is acting for his glory. So maybe that gives him some more specificity. So how is God acting for his glory? How is God acting for his name here? What is God doing to make himself known? How is God saving his people in this situation? What is God doing? How's God acting to save his people? And all of that serves to point to Jesus. Now, we would not say that every Old Testament passage has as its meaning Jesus. You know, there are some thoughts out there that would say that. But we would say, as New Testament Christians, every Old Testament passage in God's saving acts, in his glorifying acts, and what he's doing to save for himself a people, all of those things foreshadow, all of those things have an opportunity to point to Jesus, and we should want to point to Jesus, right?
Yeah.
God's greatest work to glorify himself, God's greatest work in acting to save a people for himself was in sending his son, Jesus Christ, to die on the cross and to rise again. So all you know, the greatest salvation, the Exodus salvation should point to the greatest salvation. How God is delivering his people, how God is acting mightily on behalf of his people, all of that helps us point to Jesus and God's greatest act, God's mightiest act to save his people from sin. So,
Paul, here's an idea. Yeah. I'm just going to pitch this to you on air.
Yeah.
So if parents like it, they can let you know. I had an idea. What if we did a series where you went through some of the stories in Genesis through Exodus? I don't know how far you want to take it. I mean, you could go through the whole Bible eventually, but, you know, and just talk through, okay, here's what you would want to point out for, you know, toddlers. Here's what you'd want to point out for 4 to 5 year olds.
Yeah.
And kind of give us a, you know, explain the passages, parts that might be hard for even parents to understand, because I know some of those things are like, wait, what is going on here? Even for me.
Yeah.
So, you know, kind of explain them to us, and then, you know, here's how you teach it to maybe some different ages or
that would be something sweet. Like that. That would be awesome.
I feel like you'd have a lot of fun with that.
I would have tons of fun with
you'd
that.
Probably have too much fun with that.
I would have
you
too much fun
with
that.
You wouldn't want
to do anything
else.
That probably is true. That's actually very true, probably. Yeah, don't.
What do you think, parents? Let us know.
I think that's a great idea. I didn't give him that idea. He came up with that with his own.
Yeah, I did.
That's a good idea.
You know why it was?
Why is that?
Because we were at the family retreat, and I was like, you know, Paul's going to try to teach topical. And then you didn't. You just taught right out of the Bible. And I was like, man, it's always best when Paul just teaches right out of the Bible.
What were you talking about?
You were talking about Joshua.
Oh, Joshua 24, yeah.
24, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was like,
so, yeah, that's
it. You just do awesome at taking scriptures and explaining them.
Well, that's very kind, because I don't know that I do that great all the time, but that's very kind. I was going to say this off of that. When you're teaching the Bible, you know, we have these kids' Bibles, or we have these Bibles for kids that people use. This is funny. Maybe did we do this last season where I talked about VeggieTales and how much I hate VeggieTales?
I don't know. I might have cut it out.
Yeah, you probably did. So I am not a huge fan of VeggieTales, but here's why. And I won't go into all of that. And if you like VeggieTales, I'm not against you. All I'm saying is this. VeggieTales had a knack for taking stories of the Bible and trying to teach a moral through stories of the Bible. You can't take Old Testament narrative and make some moral out of it, because that's not why God put it in there. And so a lot of times I'm not against us using Bibles for kids with great anime or great illustration and really, you know, short down succinct versions. My kids have some, we were reading the other day, read aloud stories, and there's a story about Jonah and the great fish in there. And obviously it's a very boiled down version of the story, but you got to be careful with those, that it's not trying to teach a moral that is not what the passage itself is teaching. And I think this is what's happened in a lot of churches, is we've tried to boil the stories down to some kind of moral that we're teaching. And the stories are not trying to teach a moral. They're not trying to teach kids to be nice. They're not trying to teach kids to not lie. They're not trying to teach kids how to share their toys and be others focused. The stories are about God and his work to save his people. And they're showing the character of God, and they're showing God's salvation work. And so there's a whole lot going on for the glory of God. And when we moralize the stories, we lose the whole point. So I would just be careful at any kind of resource that you use. Don't use the resources, or be careful the resources that really try to moralize the stories of the Old Testament.
We want the immoral versions.
We want the immoral versions, no. We want the God-focused versions. And I would say this too, look out for the sources that are making everything about me, or the me-centered idea, as if God's just all about me and making a home for me and being my friend and all those kinds of ideas. While they seem pretty innocent on the surface, they actually serve to undermine the gospel. And the fact is that God is glorious, God is holy, God is making for himself a people that will worship him, and there are none that can worship him. There are none. He looks over all the earth, and there are none that can worship him. Even though his own people that he saves from Egypt, they cannot come to him the way that he would want. And so he's providing a way, a means for them to come to him, but they can't come to him. And so he has to provide a greater way. He has to provide his son, Christ. And that's been the point of everything from the very beginning of time, is that Christ would come and make for himself a people through his bloody death and his glorious resurrection. And then he's taking that people and he's making them a holy, righteous people, which they are not. We are not a holy, righteous people in and of ourselves. We are an unclean, filthy, sinful, and unworthy people. And yet he's taking us and he's making us worthy in through his death and resurrection. So we don't want to undermine that work of gospel in their lives as they go forward, as our kids go forward. We want them to really feel the weight of that sin and the glory of the gospel.
And that it's one cohesive story.
It's one cohesive story. It's one story.
I think that's one of the weaknesses of the story Bibles. A lot of times is you don't see how the stories are connected.
That's absolutely right. We have the illustration I use is of the connected dot. You've seen those connect by number, drawings that you'll get at a restaurant or whatever kids will get. And the little dots will have a number by them and you connect them all. That's the way people understand the Bible, is they have all these dots that they're supposed to connect, but they don't have numbers next to them. They don't know how to connect any of them. and so they have all these dots. They have all this information like, well, there's this guy named Moses and this guy named Abraham and Noah. And then there's Paul and there's Peter and there's Daniel. I have no idea how they're all connected. I have no idea of the sequence or any of that. There are all these stories that they're good stories. There's some moral there, but there's no connection. And that is really sad and very destructive to our reading of the Bible. The Bible is so glorious if we understand its connection and the whole story. Here's some, again, this is from Straight Out of the Faithful Parent by Martha Pease and Stuart Scott. Some helpful common sense tips. Make sure that they're able to take a nap still in the afternoon or rest. They don't have to sleep, but it's just really helpful for them to be able to rest and then maybe have some quiet time if they don't want to sleep on their bed with books. This is big, and I thought this was really helpful. They're able to learn basic, practical social skills kind of thing. So for us, when somebody comes over to our house, it's important that you stand and look people in the eye and give your name or be able to answer a question or ask a question of the people there. So when we're sitting around the table, we want to ask the people questions instead of talking about ourselves. This is big at our house, okay? Because the tendency for a 4 or 5-year-old is to tell them all about what's going on, right? What you need to do is learn how to be others focused, and you need to learn to ask questions. So with 4 or 5-year-olds, we want them to start being able to ask questions of our guests, like ask them simple questions. Hey, how many kids do you have? Where do you live? What's your name? Anything like that. Try to get kids not to ask people how old they are, especially if you have older people, older ladies at your house. But
don't ask them how much they weigh.
Don't ask them how much they weigh. And they're gonna say stupid things. They're gonna say funny things, and it is funny. It's okay. But teaching them how to ask and simple social skills. You gotta teach people that. Like, teach your kids how to actually stand and look at a person and answer a question. At 4 and 5, they can start being able to do that. They need to be able to say please and thank you, things like that, and build those habits in. Make sure that they have very minimal screen time, and be super careful during this age period what you're letting them watch. don't just assume that things are okay because it's a cartoon or because somebody else has recommended it. Make sure you know what they're watching. They're able to play simple games, electronic games at this point in time. You know, I would really be careful with what you're letting them play, with what you're letting them watch, and make it very minimal. Don't use the screen as a babysitter during this time. They can be constructive with their hands. They can sit and play. They can go outside and play, even unattended at 4 and 5 years old. They can go outside and play and occupy themselves for a good amount of time. So let them do that. Get out and run, get out and exercise. And they can do that now at 4 or 5 without mommy having to watch every moment. Mm-hmm. So.
And if you are going to give them screen time, go listen to our episode from last week on how to practically set some boundaries on that.
Yeah, even for a 4 or 5 year old who's not going to be necessarily Googling things or whatever, or surfing the web, just some simple things you can put in practice to guard what they're going to
because
come
they might
on
end
their
up Googling something if they didn't, if they don't know what they're doing.
Absolutely. Yep. So, be really careful about what's coming before their eyes. You want to be careful with those little eyes and little ears and those hearts.
Should we sing, be careful little eyes, what you see? Be careful.
What has the rest of that song?
I don't remember.
For
I
the Father up above is looking down in love. Oh, be careful.
Hey, that's the same tune as if you're happy and you know it, clap your hands.
That's the same tune for a lot of things, Seth. They reuse those. Yeah, that's what happens.
Stinking children's songs.
Yeah.
Very creative.
Yep. Well, I think, you know, that's a spattering of a lot of things, but hopefully that's helpful and some good thoughts, some good ideas. You know, if you have questions or comments, you can email pfunches@fbchurch.org and you can email me and wait for about 6 weeks before I email you back.
What about your personal email?
I don't have a personal email. I just have the pfunches@fbchurch.org. So, all right. Well, I appreciate you listening.
What about your pager number? Do you have a pager number?
My pager number. Yeah. Beep, beep, beep. Oh, yeah. Somebody's calling me. I've got to find a payphone so I can call them back. Man, how did we even get anything done back then?
I don't know.
That's incredible. All right. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to Family of Faith. This podcast is a production of Family Ministries at Faith Bible Church in Spokane, Washington. Feel free to share. We only ask that you do not alter the content in any way and that you do not charge for it. Visit us at fbchurch.org for more resources, articles, and information about our ministries.